Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show Edge Rush in association with Betfred. Good to have you with us, gang, as we get you set for some of the best action that you should be looking at on the Week 12 slate. I say, Producer Ollie, the best action that our listeners should be looking at on the Week 12 slate. We've already given them some gems, of course, because Thanksgiving was a double header in the end as opposed to the trifecta with the movement of the Steelers-Ravens game. But on the games that did go ahead, we did all right, didn't we? We did okay.
Yeah, no, it was a good Thanksgiving, Nat, I think it's safe to say. I mean, we did expect there to be a lot of points in Houston Texans game against Detroit Lions. So you didn't quite expect the Texans to be able to put up the points total almost by themselves, to be honest.
I love it when you meet an over with one team securing it. Or conversely, when one team, like the Tampa Bay-New Orleans game a few weeks back, when the Saints were rolling and the 3 points the Bucks put up,
which
decimated the obit at halftime. It was just rubbing our hands like the over is definitely coming in. Maybe it's not. All right, let's get down to business. So we got, let's have a look. Three games we're going to look at in a bit more detail. Prop O is back with the prop bets. I got a long shot as well. The Edge Rush Acker of the week. That's where we're picking, it's a moneyline treble essentially. Three teams that we like the look of. Bundle them together for some all right action. All right, let's get down to business with Bucks Chiefs first of all. Probably the game of the weekend, I think, fair to say. And it's fair to say that we're expecting a lot of points in this one as well, right?
Oh, 100%. The over-under is at 56.5. It started at 53, but unsurprisingly, all the money has been coming in on the over. That's largely due to the fact that it's Patrick Mahomes, it's Tom Brady, and they both have playmakers. So why wouldn't you expect points? The Chiefs actually average a league high 32 points per game. The Bucks score 29. So, quick maths, Nat.
Don't test me on too much of maths, but go on. I'll give it a go.
No, 32 plus 29 is more than 56.5.
61?
61, yes, exactly. There you go. There you go.
Quickly. Now, Carson and I broke down this game over on our preview pod. So go and check that out if you haven't listened to it already. I will say that quite obviously the Chiefs have a fallibility defensively, particularly on the ground. So it's going to be interesting to see how much the Bucks try and establish the ground game, not just, of course, to get productivity from it, but also to set up the play action, which has been so successful for Brady this season. There's a lot of criticism that is being thrown at them in terms of what Arians and Byron Leftwich are doing, play calling, and how, I guess, retro and old school and quite static this offense looks like. And this will be, in principle, in stark contrast to the Chiefs, who are the prototype, really, of a contemporary offense, of course. But I think that's maybe a bit overstated. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they look to the ground game, get Ronald Jones rolling. He's, what, 50-odd yards this season. Five touchdowns, averaging around 70 a game. So Fournette in the mix as well. So I think if they establish that, they will be able to rack up points against the Chiefs. And we know that the Chiefs can score against any defense, even one as sturdy as the Bucks. So I like the over a lot. Even at 56.5, we should put that in context, Dahl. It sounds like a very big number, and it is. But in 2020, that is not ridiculously high, right? I mean, it's, you know, if 50 is the mean, as you called it last time out, then 56.5 is requiring a lot of action on both sides, but definitely attainable. Definitely attainable. Doesn't scare me.
No, I don't think it scares me either, to be honest. I think that's largely due to the fact that both of these offenses, when given the right defense to play against, just can absolutely go to town. And realistically, the one thing that KC really struggled to do is stop the run. Yeah. And Tampa Bay has a 4-1 overall record when the team rushes for at least 98 yards. And I think they will be easily be able to do that against the Kansas City Chiefs this week. And I also think that, as we said last week, first of all, what are the two things that Tom Brady struggles with? Playing late at night?
playing in prime time. That's the favorite narrative of the season. And, of course, pressure up the middle, right?
Exactly.
A hard game to pick in terms of, you know, Chiefs minus 3.5, right? I mean, that's above that line, above the 3 or above the 2.5 to be precise. So, don't feel strongly about that, but the over I like. I think I'm shading over. You got that glint in your eye?
Yeah, I'm shading over on this one. I'm also, as long as the line stays at 3.5, I'm shading the Bucks. I just believe that this game is going to be simply one of can Tom Brady score more points than Patrick Mahomes? Mm. And I think that the way that this Chiefs defense plays, realistically, I think they have the chance to, or if not, get very close. So I think 3.5 is quite generous, and I'd be likely to take that as well.
All right. Bears, Packers next. Packers, unsurprisingly, heavy favorites for this one, right?
Yeah, 100%. Chicago off a bye following four straight defeats. Looks like Mitch Trubisky is going to be the starter, though, as Foles is struggling with a hip injury.
Turn after Mitch.
Exactly. But regardless of whether Mitch or Nick Foles has played, they have failed to score more than 23 points in a game since week three.
Ugh, ugly.
Week three. And they have one of the worst rushing games in the league. It's just not much fun to be a Bears fan right now. Well, I think they had, like, it was a defensive player who got their leading rushing,
yes,
was their leading rushing stats a week ago, which I think is an incredible feat. And then obviously on the other side, you have Green Bay, who averaged the third most points in the league. Devontae Adams, 10 touchdowns in 8 games. Aaron Rodgers playing some incredible football at the minute. It's just whether their defense can hold up. But when you're playing an offense like Chicago's, it probably shouldn't be too difficult.
Well, yeah, that's for the line, certainly. And it's a, what, 9.5 is hefty, yeah. But I like that logic that the Bears just won't be able to get a huge amount done, much more than the over, right? Or the over under, although it's very low at 44.5, but 7 out of 10 games for the Bears have gone under, right? So that's something to bear in mind. Yeah, if you're not really buying into any uplift and uptick and galvanization of the offense with Mitch returning. I mean, I guess he gives them more on the, you know, with his legs. I guess that's kind of one advantage, but
you're clutching.
Yeah, come on, Bears. They're still going to make the playoffs probably. It comes down to whether you think that despite the obvious concerns and frailties of this Green Bay side, and I don't necessarily mean defensively, even with the offense, missteps, receivers, Valdes-Scantling in particular, being erratic, if you think that's enough to scare you off what is, you know, quite a making the Bears quite a heavy dog here. But I don't feel massively strongly on either. Would lean Packers probably. I'd take the 9.5 because I think Green Bay win it comfortably. But it's not for me something that really stands out this weekend. But do you feel strongly on either of those?
No, I don't. But it has to be said that the sharps have leaned one way, and that's for sure, and that is on Green Bay and the under. So the over-under started actually about 46.5 and has moved its way down to 44.5, and Packers actually started as only 7.5-point favourites. So it means that a lot of money has been coming in on both the Packers and the under, and I think that is actually solely down to the reason that the Bears have one of the worst offences in the league. I think that's genuinely the reason why both of those numbers have been changing, and it's hard to argue against it. You know, I don't like a number that high necessarily, but I'm exactly with you. I'd stay away from the total and probably lean towards the Packers if I was going to.
Okay, a game I feel much more strongly about is Colts-Titans. You see, I'm surprised that I feel strongly about that. Do you as well? Are we going to disagree on this?
No, I don't think we are going to disagree on this. I just think it's an interesting one because I've seen two very different arguments being posed sort of around in terms of what people are saying about these two teams. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued to see what you think.
All right. Well, I will tell you that I'm all over the Titans here. Maybe even Titans money line. Certainly Titans +3, which at the time of recording is where the line is, right?
Yeah, it is. So it's a -3, and the over under is at 51.5.
Okay, so much emphasis on what happened a couple of weeks back, right? Let's break that game down a bit. When the Colts ultimately won comfortably based on their second half performance and the score in the end, right? The Titans were obviously in front at halftime, and the reason that game ran away from them was not solely this, but a significant factor was special teams and punting in particular, right? There were two touchdowns that were scored from erratic mistakes that typically don't happen, that, you know, you can't necessarily, you know, it's a little bit like turnover ratio. When you're looking at a team that has such a distinctive turnover ratio in their advantage, that will level itself out. And it's the same thing when you look at, when you break down this game, it wasn't a case of the Colts. Yes, they stifled the Titans in the second half, and there are reasons for that. I mean, Henry had a decent game, but it was a bad performance from Tannehill, and they happen from time to time. Even in the space of 2 weeks, they've got their offense humming again, right? AJ Brown is balling, absolutely balling. Henry is always going to be a factor. The Colts contain him last time, even though they've got one of the best run defenses in the NFL. So I think they'll do that again. You can't win a game most of the time just on Henry and the Titans. And that is where I think they've been hot and cold this season, because their passing game, unlike last season where it was so consistent and Tannehill was so consistent, has been a little bit topsy-turvy. But I think they're coming into this game in their groove, and I think they're going to be an altogether different proposition. To summarize, they were running the Colts close last time out when they weren't playing particularly well. And I think they'll, I think the line for me, the number is critical. 3 points, yeah, I'm across that for sure.
I like that. And it's interesting because I think I have to say I'm indifferent on terms of the line between the two teams, purely based on the fact that I've been going against Philip Rivers for the past couple of weeks and he always seems to bite me back. So I'm kind of afraid to go against him this week just because I think the Colts' offense is actually a lot better than people are giving it credit for. But the one thing I do like about
you... That's funny, because a lot of people see it the other way. I've had it the other way around over the years. Philip Rivers has... they've come unstuck because they've backed Rivers and Rivers has done something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Bro, but you're experiencing the other way.
Oh, 100%. It's because earlier on in the season, I was watching a lot of Colts games and finding it painful to witness Philip Rivers trying to throw it past 20 yards. And he was really struggling to get anything going on offense. But the way they utilize the tight ends means that they are actually quite flexible on offense and actually quite dynamic. And I think one of the key statistics is the fact that the Titans can't really stop the run very well. And when Indianapolis rushers gain at least combined 109 yards this season, they are 5-1 overall. Mm. So I think that would be a key statistic. But the one I'm leaning towards is the over. And I think if Tennessee are going to win it, because I don't think the Tennessee defense is very good, I think they're just going to have to score points on this Colts defense. I think that's the only way they're going to be able to do it or cover this line anyway. I think Tannehill, as you said, he had a bad game in the previous matchup, but he's thrown 20 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. That's one hell of a ratio and one that probably doesn't get talked about enough. Tennessee is one of the three teams with a league best 7-1 record against the over-under. You've got Derrick Henry, who when he gets going is impossible to stop. So I see there actually being quite a lot of points in this game. With the Colts, I always see it. The exact same with the Packers game, and I think it's going to be the same with this game. I think it's going to go down to the wire. I think it's going to be tight going down the stretch. I think it just depends who makes the play in the final quarter or even in overtime, as we saw when MVS fumbled the ball for the Packers.
Look, really, really strong argument, and actually I think you convinced me to look at the over, because it is again in 2020 terms a relatively modest 51.5. I think that's a really good look. I'm still sticking with the Titans plus 3, because it, again, play the number, that's often really, really critical, and I think there is recency bias in effect here without necessarily deep diving into the reasons why the Titans were on paper beaten so comprehensively last time around. I think it's an altogether different Tennessee team that you're seeing coming into this, because the passing game is chiming. And I think that's going to cause the Colts problems and keep it close. And I'm not convinced that they are going to run away with it as they have done. And you were pointing out before we started recording in your always deeply researched running order, producer role, each of the Colts' 6 victories other than last week's overtime win against Green Bay has been decided by at least 4 points, right? So when they win, they tend to win comfortably. But I think that ends this time around, or certainly if they do, I don't think it's going to be by that margin. And like I said, I'm not even like a sneaky Tennessee money line.
Yeah. Interestingly, Nat, everyone in terms of the sharps, in terms of the money, has been going towards the Titans. This line actually opened up at 4.5.
Right.
And has moved its way down to 3. I think a lot of people believe that number was way too big at the start, which I tend to agree with. But yeah, I think it's going to be a close game, this one, and it could go either way.
Oh, you know where I like to roll with, who I like to roll with and where I like to hang? With the sharps, right?
That's, yes, you love the sharps.
Love the sharps.
You speaking love of, the sharps.
Speaking of which, prop O, time for your prop bets. You got 3 goodies. Talk us through.
My first one is quite a big, actually I've gone for a couple of big numbers, but I do expect these players to have big days. The first one, and I know you've got an opinion on this game, so I'll come to you afterwards. Mm. Robbie Anderson versus the Vikings. Over 72.5 yards. I mean, Anderson ranks 9th amongst wide receivers in yards. There's no doubt he's benefited massively by moving away from the Jets. I think we can say that.
Every player ever.
Yeah, exactly. I love his matchup this week. He's going to be covered by Cameron Dantzler, the rookie, who's been absolutely burned in coverage whenever he has had to take on anyone of any caliber. And when Minnesota are at home, interestingly, they seem to not be able to stop the passing game at all. So when they're away from home, they only concede on average about 220 yards passing per game. At home, 300 passing yards per game. So whatever it is about them playing at home means They struggled to stop the pass. And I think with Teddy Bridgewater very much likely to return this week, Anderson's going to have a very good time. So I think he's going to go over 72.5 yards.
Nice, like it. And your little aside on that, I like the over in this game a lot, particularly with Teddy back. I think we're both in lockstep on that, right? We like the over.
Yeah, 100%. I think whenever the game seems to be played in Minnesota, there always seems to be lots of points. And Kirk Cousins has been incredible, by the way, at home in Minnesota. If you look at some of his stacks, I think he's the best fourth quarter quarterback in the league at home, Kirk Cousins. There's a niche statistic for you.
I love that stat. I'm going to get you a t-shirt, maybe even a mug that just says, Kirk Cousins has been incredible in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that is going to really come back to bite me. That really will. He's incredible. I mean, they usually probably still lose, but he seems to throw touchdowns nonetheless, even if they're in vain. Great.
The stats always look good for Kirk, even if the rest of it doesn't.
My second one, sadly, it does come against the Bengals. I think Evan Ingram is going to have a big game against Cincinnati. I think the Giants are going to have a lot of the ball. I don't think Ryan Finley is going to be able to get much going on the offensive side. And over 37.5 yards, I think, for Evan Ingram will be quite easy. He only managed 15 yards in week 10 against the Eagles, but prior to that had over 40 receiving yards in his previous three games. So I don't see why anything different would happen this week. And the Bengals' opponents have targeted their tight ends 23% of the time, which is the third highest mark in the league. And just Cincinnati look like they just can't stop tight ends. And I'm actually a big fan of Evan Ingram. I think he's someone who also would benefit from moving out of New York, realistically. So, yeah, I expect them to use Evan Ingram a lot. Daniel Jones will go to him as much as he can. And, yeah, I expect him to easily go over the 37.5 mark. And the last one is a big number. And I'm a little bit more apprehensive about this one. But nonetheless, I still just think I'm such a big fan of him. You actually had a good conversation with him, which I witnessed in Miami for the Super Bowl, which is Darren Waller. Such a great guy. What an amazing story. If you don't know about it, go check it out. I think he's going to get over 57.5 yards. The Falcons concede on average 62 yards to tight ends a game. And this isn't just any tight end, it's Darren Waller. He gets targeted a quarter of the time by Derek Carr when he throws the ball, which is a lot. And obviously, I think a lot of people are expecting a shootout between the Falcons and the Raiders. So I expect Derek Carr to be throwing the ball a lot. The number is high, as Waller's only received more than 57 yards three times this season. But going down the stretch, playoffs on the line, Derek Carr's going to throw to his best players. And Darren Waller is certainly one of those. So I see him going over 57.5 yards.
I love it. Proposition O, nailing it. Like all three of those. Incidentally, you've obviously been doing your homework and listening to the shows that you don't actually produce for us during the week, because that's not always a given. But you mentioned I interviewed Darren Waller at the Super Bowl. As you'll know, Mike and I spent a long time on the show yesterday, which we dropped Friday morning, talking about players on the Hall of Fame semi-final list that I've interviewed. That's a really fascinating 2 minutes of your time to go check that out, including the now legendary Tiger Woods golf with Rondé Barber. We were suggesting that what we should do during the Hall of Fame discussion, when they're all sitting around deciding who should make the cut, that should be put forward as evidence for why Rondé should be in. So that Darren Waller touches us. But also, and you must be listening to the whole episode, because comedian David Whitney on the show as well, big New York Giants fan, was discussing how players just always get better the moment they leave New York. And we were making the comparison. It's a bit like West Ham fans out there will sympathize with this. Why, two things really with this. Why, when players most of the time come to West Ham, they suddenly cease to be good, although things are looking up now, but that's historically seems to be the case. And secondarily, why players will always score against West Ham when they haven't. If you hear a stat which is so-and-so hasn't scored in 14 games, they'll score, guaranteed to score against West Ham. I'll try to find the NFL equivalent of that. Which team is one that will break bad streaks for probably the Jets, maybe.
The Jets or the Jaguars this season could easily one. We'll get onto that in just a second. We go onto our ACCA, but I think it's time for your long shot, Nat.
So look, I guess we've got to look at what constitutes a long shot, and maybe there's something we can develop throughout the course of the season with Edge Rush, put a few dogs together. But I think it is obviously, it's obviously a dog, it's obviously a team getting points. So the one that stands out for me is Carolina. They're getting three against Minnesota. We said we like that game anyway, for the over. Certainly with the plus three, I like. The money line is worth the roll of the dice as well. Lots of reasons for this. They were strong, obviously, against Detroit last time out without Teddy, and defensively, of course, in particular, shutting out Matt Stafford for the first time in his career. That's not to be underestimated. This Vikings side lost to Dallas, and extraordinary, really, that they're run came to an end against against the Cowboys, who, as was evidenced again last night at Thanksgiving, are a mediocre side. So I think this is a really intriguing line. Three is definitely interesting, and you'll get, I reckon, around about evens just over there. But the money line, even better there. I'd take a look at that, like Carolina.
Yeah, no, I have to say, I do really like that pick, Nat. I think looking at the way Minnesota imploded defensively against Dallas and seeing how easy it is actually to stunt Dallas defensively, as we saw against Washington last night, I think that Carolina should find it relatively easy to put points on this Minnesota defense. And I think the way that Teddy Bridgewater can manage a game, I think utilizing DJ Moore, utilizing Robbie Anderson, as I've already said in the podcast, and also Mike Davis. I know everyone talks about no Christian McCaffrey, but Mike Davis has been incredibly productive in both the receiving game and the rushing game. So I really like that pick. I think that Minnesota are an incredibly inconsistent team. So I think we might see my only fear with that is the idea that you can get a completely different Minnesota team week on week. So you don't know which one's going to turn up. And obviously Dalvin Cook, incredible player. So he could easily just run all over this Panthers team. But in terms of there being value, I see there being a lot of value in this Carolina Panthers team.
One of the sneaky ones, I mentioned that I like the Titans earlier as well, again, as, and taking their money line would definitely represent, I think, a long shot. But I still like that, certainly with the points. But I like Arizona, only giving up one against New England. You know, this is a defense that New England's that is ranked 32nd on defensive DVOA. Kyler's shoulders hurt, which is obviously a concern and to bear in mind. But I was surprised that they're not heavier favorites here. Now, you've got a smile and a smirk on your face. So what? But you obviously disagree with this.
What? No, no, no. I don't disagree with you. But what does that remind you of?
Trap game.
Yeah, it just reminds me of Miami last week. Yeah. There's no reason for the Patriots, coming off a loss against the Houston Texans, to be effectively a pick'em against the Arizona Cardinals, who have beaten the Seahawks already this season, and Kyler Murray has been putting in MVP caliber performances.
Is it Kyler's shoulder they're worried about? Do you think that's why they think he'll be less mobile? He's going to take they're going to take less risks in terms of design runs for him, and maybe that's what it is. But I don't know. I still like it. I like Arizona, but I'm not certain as I am about our edge rush ack of the week. Our money line treble. Three teams on the money line. Put them together. Currently 7-4 on the Betfred site. So that sounds interesting. Oh, we're going with the Saints to win, Seattle to win, and Cleveland to win.
Yes, we are. Let's start with Cleveland. They are taking a trip to Jacksonville, and the Browns, for the first time, are going to have the opportunity to throw the ball because there's going to be nice weather in Jacksonville instead of them playing in Cleveland.
In
Jacksonville
hail and sleet.
Still
worried. You got Baker, and you got Glennon, the return of Glennon. That slightly worries me. I don't want to talk ourselves out of the trouble. No, we're gonna. I'm gonna stay with it. Cleveland all the way.
So what? You're scared of Glennon?
I'm scared. I'm scared of the Mike Glennon bounce. That's what I'm saying. Well, it kind of got much worse with respect to Jake Luton. I mean, boy,
that was tough.
It was tough. Oh, God, talk about wrong situation, wrong time, right? It's amazing how certain quarterbacks just get parachuted into a difficult situation. You never hear from them again, which is kind of Mike Glennon's history in a way. Okay, so Cleveland first. In Baker, we trust. I like that. Seattle?
Seattle's an interesting one because there's been a lot of money coming in on Philadelphia, and the line is actually moved around. It started at 3 and then moved out to 5. So 3, obviously, there seemed to be a ridiculous amount of value there for Seattle. So put loads of money was put on that. But then as soon as it moved out to 5, a lot of people are putting a lot of value on this Philadelphia defense and the way that it's kind of recovered from a lot of the injury problems they had. So now that the line has moved out that far, people have been coming in on Philadelphia. So why are you so convinced that Seattle are going to win this one?
Oh, because they are demonstrably a class apart. I think their defense, much maligned defense, is starting to get some pass rush going as well. This is a bad Philadelphia side. I mean, look, it doesn't take rocket science that any team in the NFC East you would qualify as bad. It's not even a fair fight, I think, on the coaching side as well. You look at, break down all the different components of a team. It's virtually uptick for Seattle everywhere except even their weak links, even like secondary is not even that clear cut. So Seattle all the way for me.
I feel very similarly about New Orleans, who is the third part of our treble. I mean, the New Orleans D have given up one touchdown in the past three games.
Yeah.
The only reason Denver beat Miami was because of the fact they could run the ball so successfully. New Orleans is the number one ranked defense against the run in the NFL. So that means that Drew Lock is going to be coming under a stupid amount of pressure. And when that happens, I tend to always fade Denver because it means he's going to be forced to throw the ball. He's going to be forced into making mistakes. I don't think he's going to be dancing his way around the Denver field, sadly, this week. I think that this could be an absolute, I think this could be verging on a shutout from the New Orleans defense against this team. I'm not even that bothered by what Taysom Hill does on the other side of the ball. I think he only needs to put up 14 points to win this game.
Well, Taysom Hill, you know, was pretty competent, and a lot of people are saying, well, you know, I mean, for his debut, he didn't, no turnovers. He's got another week getting used to this as well. 100% with you on this. New Orleans all the way. And I think the beginning of the end for Drew Lock in Denver. God, they come back and jinx us again 2 weeks in a row. That's going to be trouble.
Yeah, we could. But I'm even going to double down on this now, my anti-Denver narrative, and say that I actually do quite like a Lock over 1.5 interceptions at 6-4 as well. I mean, this could honestly be, I don't know, I think Drew Lock might actually haunt my dreams if Denver, firstly, cover the spread against New Orleans, even win this game, or if Drew Lock goes for 300-plus yards and throws the three touchdowns with zero interceptions. I would have to hang my hat up next week for sure on my anti-Denver narrative, but I'm not sure just yet. As you know, Nat, I love to buy low, sell high.
You do.
And right now, Denver off a win against Miami, I think people are actually going to value them higher than they should be. So I'm all New Orleans for this one.
I promise you one thing. Christmas is coming soon. Oh, I am buying you a Drew Lock jersey. If Denver mess up our, which we had a Lock of the Week last week, they messed up. If they mess up our Acker of the Week, Drew Lock jersey coming your way at Christmas. I might even get you one anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I don't think I could. I don't think I could wear it. I think, again, that would just be damaging to my psyche. But yeah, I can't see it happening. Please don't do this again, Denver. I can't sit there and watch a Denver Broncos team struggle to another victory like I did last Sunday. God, that was painful.
What do you think of our, going back to that Jacksonville-Cleveland game, David Whitney and I came up with an idea of, with Mike Glennon in for the Jacksonville this week, for Jacksonville the rest of the season or until Gardner Minshew's fit again, just starting mediocre quarterbacks from the last 10 years in the NFL. So Blaine Gabbert gets a start, Christian Ponder. Do you like it?
I actually think that's a great shout. I think, why not Jacksonville? Because they're going to end up with, hopefully, in their minds, Trevor Lawrence anyway, or Justin Fields. So I think you might as well have like a carousel or like a showpiece. Just that all of the NFL quarterbacks who realistically are never going to start a game again in the league, just say, why don't you go and have one more chance?
One more quarter.
Yeah, one more quarter each. And then just see what they can do.
Made that a reality show. So just basically, let's find wherever Matt Castle is right now. Let's find him, man. He has a week to get ready. He has a week to learn the offense and go next Sunday. I reckon I would watch that.
Yeah, I'd watch that. Or you could even go as far as going back, obviously, in a brilliant book, Paper Lion. You could even just start getting journalists to play quarterback for Jacksonville Jaguars.
Mate, my time is now, is what you're saying.
Right? What about you at receiver and Carlson at quarterback? What about
Deal.
We try that?
Deal. I think my quarterback days, I think we've established that. That's not my position, but I'm in. Where would you play at? You'd be quite a good linebacker.
I like myself as a tight end.
I can see you as a tight end. But are you a kind of unreconstructed, old school, blocking first tight end, or are you more of a...
The direct opposite. I won't block
finesse.
At all.
You won't put the hard graft in.
But no, definitely not. No, I'm strictly just about the flashy catches. That's all I'm about. And I actually double up as a kicker as well.
Yeah. I've seen tape of you in Miami. Actually, thinking about that
from 40 yards, Nat. From 40 yards,
mate. I think my kick is on film, straight through. That's a bit. Olofsky bigged up my kicking, if I remember rightly. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
He did pick up your kicking. Your kicking's not bad, but no, I'm afraid that is...
You say my kicking's not bad. When I showed you the video of that kick, you were just in hysterics, shaking your head. Let's not beat around the bush there. All right. Well, our NFL playing day is probably over, but I do like that idea anyway. And that is a nice way to wrap up another Edge Rush. Hope you've enjoyed that. Remember, of course, if you do get involved with any of the action, you've got to be 18 plus. Please gamble responsibly. GambleAware.org is the website you need to check out. And the odds that we've referenced here on the show, accurate at the time of recording. at the time of recording, which is Friday afternoon. Betfred are back with their double delight offer on first touchdown scorers. They pick the Titans, Colts and Chiefs Bucks this week. So, for example, if you fancy Derrick Henry to score the first touchdown in the Titans game, and he does, but then scores a second as well, that is quite conceivable. Betfred will double your odds and pay you out in cash. Loving that. Singles only. Bets must be placed prior to kickoff to qualify. Betfred rules apply. In full terms at betfred.com/promotions. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. And please gamble responsibly. Best of luck, Prop O, with the weekend's action. You're back in the producing saddle Monday, right? For a week 12 preview show. Nicky Bandini in the house.
Yes, Nikki Bandini is in the house. We're hopefully going to be talking about, for both of us, an Arizona win, and she is an Arizona Cardinals fan, so we'll be reviewing that Patriots game in depth, and hopefully you'll be a happy man. And yeah, I just really hope that Denver don't win.
So do I, because otherwise it's going to cost me like 120 quid for your Drew Lock. maybe they'll be in the sale. Although if he keeps winning, they probably won't, right? If he keeps hanging on to the game. Exactly. Great work, Carl. Good to see you. I hope you've enjoyed the show. We're back Monday with our Week 12 review show. Look forward to it. See you then, gang. Bye for now.